Thanks for listening to this week's Wellspring Church podcast.
All right, we are wrapping up the series today, wrapping up 50 Shades of They. And we went the whole series without anyone getting mad at us for that title. So I'm really, really excited about that because I just knew someone was going to complain about the title. But we've been talking for the last few weeks about they, about the people in our life who have influence on our life. In fact, that's how we've defined it for the entire series. They influence the direction and quality of our lives. Right? And what we've been talking about is since people in our life are going to influence the direction and quality of our life, we should make sure that we choose wisely. We should make sure that we have the right they in our life, because we've all had opportunities, we've all had times in our life where we had the wrong they. And we did things we wish we had done because they had been around. And so for the last couple of weeks, we've been kind of wrestling with this issue about how to find the right they, who's the right they, how do we know what the right they looks like. And if you were here the first week, we kind of discovered a foundational principle that we could really base everything else on. And it's this. It's that the right they, this is they, the right they have he in the middle, which means that the right they build their life on Jesus, that he is the foundation of everything they do. Because as we learned week one, a wise person builds their life on Jesus. And so we started talking about, okay, if we want to be the right they, we need to build our life on Jesus. And if we want to give people the ability to have influence and to control the direction of our lives, we need to make sure they have Jesus in their life. And so that's kind of where I left you week one. And then last week, we kind of picked right back up, and we started talking about who is they. And what we learned is not everybody's they. In fact, most people in your life are not they, right? They are people in your life that are very close. They have very close relationships with them. We're talking about your business partners. We're talking about your best friends. We're talking about your significant others, right? We're talking about people that you have a very close relationship with, right? We're talking about people that you are teamed up with. These are people whose opinion you really care about. If you're having a struggle in your marriage or at work, you're going to go to them and you're going to ask for their advice. If they're going to a party, like, you're going to go to that party. If they're not going to go to the party, your kid's going to mysteriously get sick and you're not going to go. Y'all don't use your kids as an excuse? I don't either. Never done it. Right, we're on the same page. I've never done it. I don't know why I said that. Sorry. But we're talking about people that we are teamed up with. And last week we studied this guy. His name's Paul. He wrote about half of what we call the New Testament, right? And Paul was this guy who was a pastor. He was a church leader. And he would start new churches, and then he would write letters to those churches to give them instructions for how to live their life. And here's the really amazing thing. We believe, as Christians, that almost 2,000 years later, we can read those letters, and we know what God wants us to do with our lives. And Paul has a lot to say about the they in our life. And last week, we read an example from Paul where he gave this amazing picture about the dangers of teaming up, of partnering up with the wrong they. And what Paul talked about was he used the illustration of a yoke. You know, a yoke was basically a wooden piece of farm equipment that a farmer would attach to two animals, and it would allow him to pull and plow rows in his field. And Paul's point was, don't be unequally yoked, because a farmer would never put two different animals on the yoke. He would always put animals that are equal size, equal strength, because that way they were going to pull equally, and he could have straight rows. Because if one was strong and one was weak, they were going to pull sideways, and he wasn't going to have straight rows, and he wanted straight rows. Straight rows were very helpful. Straight rows were the way that they could very quickly discern between what was supposed to be there, a crop, and what wasn't supposed to be there, a weed. Because as the crops were first growing, the crops and the weeds looked exactly alike. And so he could look down the row, and if he saw they were in a straight line, they were crops and they were supposed to be there. And if they were not in that line, they were a weed, and he knew to remove them. So it was something that they could do. And so what Paul's point is, he's saying, hey, look, as you're walking through life, as you're looking for the people you're going to team up with, you're going to partner with, your business partners, your significant others, your best friends, hey, make sure you're pulling the same direction. And make sure you're on the same team. That was really the point. That was what he was trying to say. And last week I kind of left you there saying, hey, you know, you need to do a connection inspection and try to figure out, are you partnered up with the wrong thing? And I gave you a series of questions that I wanted you to ask. And question number one was, how do I know if we're yoked? And the answer is, do they influence the direction and quality of your life? The people you're yoked to are not the people you want to be yoked to. They're the people that have influence over the quality and direction of your life. So when you're around them, do you act differently? It could be positive, it could be negative. But that's how you know you are yoked to somebody, that you're teamed up, because they have influence on your life. So the next question was, how do we know if we're unequally yoked? And the answer is very simple. Look at the path you're leaving. You got to look behind you, and are you happy with the path? And that was really the last question I asked you. I asked you this question. I said, do you love the path you're leaving? And that's where I left you last week. Do you love the path you're leaving? Are you proud of the path? Do you want your kids to follow in the path that you are living? Do you like where your life is headed? And what I said last week was this. If the answer is yes, change nothing. But if the answer is no, then come back, because we have some suggestions. We have some things for you to try. We want to talk about how to make sure we are partnering up with the right they instead of the wrong they. And here's what I know happened over the last week. Many of you, you thought about that question, you kind of wrestled with it, you began looking at the people in your life, and you came to the stark conclusion that you are teamed up in some areas with the wrong they. I know we have spouses in here today who came back not knowing what to do because you realize you're married to someone who doesn't believe in God. They don't believe in Jesus. They do not have the same foundation that you do. You are, as Paul would say, unequally yoked, and you don't know what to do. Some of you realize that your business partner does not have the same foundation that you do, does not have the same principles that you do, does not make the same moral decisions you do, does not have the same ethics you do, and you don't know what to do. Some of you realize, man, my best friend forever, but they're just going in a completely opposite direction as I am. What am I supposed to do? Some of our students, hopefully, some of our teenagers, you realize this week, that little girl, that little boy that you're dating, they have no interest in what Jesus wants for your life. And you don't know what to do. Break up with them. That's what you do. Right now. I mean, get your phone out. I don't care. Go ahead. I'm just kidding. I've done that before. I've literally take your phone out and text them right now. My pastor says we have to break up. I don't care. But many of you have these discussions and you've been wrestling with it. And so what I want to do today is I want to address this head on. I want to address the people in the room who, or maybe it's your first week and you're just hearing all this and you're realizing, well, wait a minute. Yeah, I've got some of these people in my life. I want to talk about what we should do. And the first thing I want to do is kind of want to give you some hope, right? Because I kind of tipped my hand last week. Like, the answer isn't we have to abandon these people. Like, that is not God's answer to this. You look at Jesus' life, he didn't abandon anybody. We don't have to abandon these people. What we do is we have to change our approach to the relationship. We have to completely change our approach. Now, the best way for me to explain this is I want to start with one specific group, okay? Because this one specific group is a little different than the rest of the people we're going to talk about. But this one specific group gives us the best picture of what it looks like to do what I believe Jesus would call us to do for the people in our life that are close to us, people that we love, people that we've known forever. We have a foundation in Jesus. We love Jesus. They don't know Jesus. They don't have a foundation with Jesus. So we are, quote unquote, unequally yoked. What do we do? Teenagers, break up. Everybody else, let's talk about what we're going to do. Okay? And the first group I want to talk to are the people in the room who are married to someone who they would say is not a Christian. Now, please hear me. I said married. 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 Like, officially. Like, you walked that aisle, you got the ring, you signed married. I'm not talking about dating. I'm not talking about engaged. I'm not talking about whatever it is y'all do now as students. Y'all go together or talk or Instagram. I don't know. I'm not cool at all. I don't know what y'all do, but all I remember when I was growing up, you never called somebody your boyfriend or your girlfriend. You had other words for it. You know, oh, we're just talking. Talking about what? Talking about dating. Like, it was just the stupidest thing in the world. But so the first thing I'm going to do is I want to speak directly to the people in this room who over the last 2 weeks you've realized, you know, you're a Christ follower and your spouse isn't. And last week that meant you were unequally yoked. So what on earth are you supposed to do? That's a valid question, right? Well, here's the cool thing. You're not the first people to have that question. In fact, that question is as old as Christianity itself. When Jesus, you know, came to earth, had his 3-year ministry, he died, he came back to life, he started the church. From that day, there have been spouses who became Christ followers and the other spouse did not. And they've wondered, what do we do? Do we stay together? Do we leave them? We don't know what to do. And they asked Paul this question. They said, hey, Paul, you're a leader. What do we do? Because we want to please Jesus. We want to do what he says. But I love him. We have kids together. What am I supposed to do, Paul? And again, Paul answers this question. If anybody ever tries to tell you the Bible is not relevant, they just haven't read it. They just don't know because it's in there. Paul clearly addresses this issue in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Here's what he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, starting in verse 12. He says this. He says, if a fellow believer has a wife who is not a believer, and she is willing to continue living with him, he must not leave her. Then he says this. And if a believing woman, much more common, has a husband who is not a believer, let's be honest, that's what we're talking about, right? If a believing woman has a husband who is not a believer, and he is willing to continue living with her, she must not leave him. And some of you in the room just went, whew. No. Must not leave. Paul's saying, hey. It's okay. It's already happened. You're already married. See, God takes marriage very seriously. Because to him, marriage is an earthly picture of our eternal relationship with him. And it's supposed to be one man and one woman for life. So God takes it super seriously. And so he's saying, hey, if you're already married, again, already married, if you're already married and one becomes a Christ follower and the other's not, no. Don't leave them. But then he says this. He says, but hey, I need to warn you. It's not my design. It's not my plan. So it's not going to be quite as easy. It's not going to go quite as well. You're going to have some struggles, which is why, again, I would say to single people, students, break up. It's why I would say to single people, don't even do it. Don't even date. Don't even go down that road because it's not going to work. But if you are already in the situation, Paul says, hey, you don't have to break up. You don't have to leave them. You don't have to abandon them, but you do have to change your approach to the relationship. Here's what he says. For the believing wife brings holiness to her marriage. That's a key phrase. And the believing husband brings holiness to his marriage. He brings holiness. Holiness is just a fancy word for saying God's way, right? Holiness means you are set apart. It means you are different than everybody else, which means for us, we choose to follow God's plan and God's path rather than our own path. We want our life to be set apart. We want our life to be different than everybody else because our life is built on God's standard, not our own standard. And this is why it's more difficult. Because if you are in a marriage where both people already have a foundation in Jesus, you do not have to bring holiness to it. Holiness is there. Because Jesus is the foundation. Because you are equally yoked. You are equally partnered. And you both can pull together in the same direction with Jesus as your foundation. It doesn't mean it's going to be perfect, but it means you can both pull together. What Paul's saying is if you find yourself in a situation where you are irrevocably unequally yoked, which he would say if you are married to the person you are, he would say it is your job to bring holiness to the marriage, which means you have to be Jesus for both of you. That's your calling. What that means is you have to show Jesus' love to them even when you don't get it back. That means you're going to have to forgive a lot more than they do. You're going to have to love unconditionally even when you don't get it back. You're going to have to serve. You're going to have to be patient. Basically, all the things Jesus does for you. Paul says, hey, that's your charge. That's your calling. I don't want you to abandon the relationship, but you have to change the approach to the relationship. In many ways, you are not partners. In many ways, you have to become the leader. And you have to lead them to Jesus by bringing holiness to them. That's what Paul says next. He says, hey, don't you wives realize that your husbands might be saved because of you? And don't you husbands realize that your wives might be saved because of you? So that's what he's saying. He's saying, look, you have to bring holiness. And in many ways, that's actually his answer to all of us. In all the relationships, anywhere where you would say, I have, quote unquote, partnered up, I am teamed up, I am yoked up with the wrong they, I am yoked up with people who don't have the same foundation I do, who don't have the same belief in Jesus I do, our calling is not to abandon them. It is to change our approach to them. And we are to bring holiness. We are to bring Jesus to them. Now, this is modeled no better than by Jesus himself. If you read the four biographies we have of Jesus' life, we call them the Gospels, the Good News, we see Jesus constantly bringing holiness to other people. We see him constantly reaching out and trying to start relationships and form relationships, but he limited the influence they had on him. He was able to bring holiness to them without partnering with them, without giving them the ability to have influence on his life. And he passed this on to his earliest followers. His earliest followers took this up. And in fact, there's some great examples in his earliest followers. He was calling his disciples. We see this work out. We see what it looks like to discover Jesus for yourself and then bring holiness to the they in your life. It starts with this guy. His name is Andrew. And Jesus had an encounter with Andrew, and he calls Andrew to become a follower. And Andrew becomes a follower. And in John chapter 1, verse 41, then this happens. It says, Andrew went to find his brother. See, Andrew had an encounter with Jesus that has changed his life, and his brother was one of his they. See, his brother was not only one of his best friends, they were actually business partners, because that always works out so well. It's one of the reasons I think Jesus came and saved them, because they were in business with family. Always works, especially when it's two brothers. They never fight. So Andrew went to find his brother Simon, and look, he told him, we found the Messiah. Which means Christ. He goes to him and says, we found him. And let me explain what that means, because you may not know we found the Messiah. What does that mean? What that means is we found the answer to everything. For the Jewish people, the Messiah was the hope of the world. So they were saying, every problem you've got, every struggle you've got, we got the answer. We got the answer. His name is Jesus. We found the Messiah. We have found him. You must come meet him. And that's exactly what happens. So then Andrew brought Simon to meet Jesus. Remember, when you bring, you bless. You can invite a stranger, but you can only bring a friend. He was very close with Peter. You're very close with the they in your life. Not only do you have to bring holiness to them, sometimes you're going to have to bring them to holiness. You're going to have to bring them to Jesus. That's what happens here. Andrew brought Simon to meet Jesus. Watch what happens. Then Andrew brought Simon to meet Jesus, and looking intently at Simon, Jesus said, your name is Simon, son of John, but you will be called Cephas, which means Peter. Jesus changes his name, as one does. I mean, could you imagine, this guy claims to be God, and you shake his hand, and he changes your name. I would not believe that person, but that's why he's Jesus, and I'm not. So Peter says, okay, you're the guy, and he has his life changed. Look what happens next. The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee, and he found Philip and said, come follow me. Now watch this. Philip was from Bethsaida, Andrew and Peter's hometown. So the implication is the night before, Andrew and Peter were talking to Philip. But dude, we met Jesus. We met this guy. He's changed our life. He's the Messiah. You've got to meet him. And so the next day, Jesus runs into Philip and says, hey, come follow me. And Philip does, because his buddies have brought holiness to him. His brother, his buddies, his they had come to him and said, hey, man, we think this guy's the guy. We think he's the hope of the world. This is really it. So watch what Philip does. Philip went to look for Nathanael. Philip's like, well, my buddy Nathaniel needs to hear about this. He's one of my they. He needs to understand what's going on. He says, we have found the very person Moses and the prophets wrote about. His name is Jesus. The hope of the world, he's saying. The answer to everything is a man. And his name is Jesus. If you are a guest today and you hear nothing else, hear me say, the answer to every problem you have, the hope of the world for your life is a man, and his name is Jesus. And we want nothing more than to introduce you to him. Now, I love this story because Philip goes to Nathaniel, and Nathaniel's the first guy who kind of cocks an attitude, right? Nathaniel looks back and he says, Nazareth? Can anything good come from Nazareth? See, he kind of looks down his nose at Nazareth the way you look down your nose at... So you thought I was going to say the name of a town, but I didn't. You thought I was. Didn't do it. You thought I was going to say a sports team. Didn't do it. I'm learning. I'm growing. I'm maturing. But whatever town you thought of in your head, because I thought of two. Whatever sports team you thought of, I thought of one. Whatever you thought of, okay... Put it there. Because Nathaniel's like, oh, come on, really? And see, this is the first time we see someone kind of hating on Jesus and hating on the church. And saying, really? That can't be true. Oh, you go to that church? You mean that big old cult on the corner where they have like really loud music? Please. I'm not going there. I'm gonna stop. Okay, I want you to see what Philip does here. This is a little side note, right? We're just teaching a lot here. A little side note. Because what our natural instinct is, right, is to bow up and defend and say, well, let me tell you, and I'm going to debate you, and I'm going to prove with 5 words or really on Facebook. I'm going to write a really long Facebook message that nobody's going to read because it just screams crazy, but it's going to be really long, and I'm going to tell you all the reasons you're wrong. No, 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 no. I say this all the time. Jesus does not need us to stand up for him. He is just fine. But Philip encounters a hater. Nathaniel's like, really? Come on. I want you to see Philip's response because this should be our response. Look what he says. He says, come and see for yourself. He says, I don't have to defend this guy. I don't need to defend him. I can't change your mind anyway. You got so many questions. You got so many problems. Why don't you just come see for yourself? And that's exactly what Nathaniel does. Look what happens. As he approached Jesus, Jesus said, now here's a genuine son of Israel, a man of complete integrity. So he starts complimenting Nathaniel as he shows up. Nathaniel's still not buying it. He says, how do you know about me? Nathaniel asks, how do you know who I am? And then Jesus does something, and we always forget this. Jesus does something only he can do. He does something you can't do. So you should stop trying. I should stop trying. Look what Jesus does. Jesus says, I could see you under the fig tree before Philip found you. He says, Nathaniel, man, I've been watching you for years. I know you. I know where you were yesterday. I know where you are today. And I love you, man. Come on. See, he gave Nathaniel exactly what he needed. Philip had no idea. Philip couldn't have done that. But Jesus did. All Philip did was say, come and see. Philip brought him to Jesus. That's why we say when you bring, you bless. Because when you bring someone, you put them in a position to have an encounter with Jesus. And Jesus can do things you can't do. In this case, Jesus spoke to him and said, man, I see you. I know who you are. And look at Nathanael's response. Then he exclaimed, Rabbi, you are the Son of God, the King of Israel. You know, at our core, we're all kind of narcissistic, right? And so when the God of the universe says, hey, I know you. I've been watching you. I have a plan for you. Kind of feels good to us, doesn't it? Kind of feels right. And that's exactly what he did to Nathaniel. And in that moment, Nathaniel changed and said, my God, you are the Son of the Most High. Who in your life right now has been asking you questions, been complaining, been saying, I'm not going to that place, and you've been trying to debate them and argue with them? Just this Sunday, just say, you know what? I'm not going to argue with you anymore. Just come and see. Just come and see for yourself, because you never know what Jesus has planned. That's exactly what happened here. When these people got serious about bringing holiness, bringing Jesus to the they in their life. There's one more story I want to share because I just love it so much. It's from the book of Mark. And it actually tells the story of a guy named Matthew. He's also called Levi. He had two names like Southerners. And so sometimes they call him Matthew. Sometimes they call him Levi. Sometimes they call him Skeeter. But Mark calls him Levi. And so this tells a story of Jesus' calling Levi. Matthew's the guy who wrote the book of Matthew, right? But Mark tells us a story of how he became a Christ follower. Here's what he says. In Mark chapter 2, verse 14, he says, as Jesus was walking along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at his tax collector's booth. He was a tax collector. Now, I mean, none of you like the IRS now, but back then, tax collectors, another name for them would have been con men. Because they were criminals. They really were. What they would do is they had freedom to charge whatever they wanted for taxes. So let's say Rome says, hey, this year everybody owes 10% of their income, 15% of their income. The tax collectors could go to them and say, you owe 35% of your income. And there was no arguing with them. You had to pay it. And they would give Rome what Rome had asked for, and they'd pocket the difference. And everybody knew they did this. So they were criminals. They were con men, and everyone hated them. They were a despised group. So that's who Levi is. Watch what happens when Jesus walks up to him. Jesus says these words. He says, follow me and be my disciple. So Levi got up and followed him. A con man. A criminal. Someone who definitely was partnered up with the wrong day. Who was in business with people who had definitely not the same foundation he did. They were cheaters just like him. Jesus changes his life. So clearly we would assume that he abandoned these people, right? No. That's not what happens. Watch this. I love it so much. Watch what happened. Later, Levi invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests. It ain't no dinner. It's a party. Along with many tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. What Levi does is he says, you know what, man, this guy's changed my life. I was a criminal. I'm not going to be a criminal anymore, but I've got all these criminal friends. What is the best way to introduce them to Jesus? I know. I'll have a party. Invite all my criminal friends. I'll invite Jesus too, and watch what Jesus does. Levi says, I am going to bring holiness to them. I am going to step out and make sure they have an encounter with Jesus. And guess what? Not everybody liked it. Look at this. But when the teachers of religious law, I forgot this one. Oh, I love this too. I'm sorry, I skipped it. Here's the thing. There were many people of this kind among Jesus' followers. There were many con men. There were many cheaters. There were many disreputable sinners amongst Jesus' followers. I love that. Because Jesus put his money where his mouth is. He's like, I'm here to save everybody. I'm here to save the people that are lost. And that's why you have some friends who have seen some pictures on Facebook of people who attend our church. And you're like, well, I can't go to that church if that person shows up. Okay, go somewhere else then. Because we want our church to look like Jesus' church. We want our group to look like Jesus' group. And we're told that there were a ton of people who hung around Jesus that were just like that. But as I was saying, some people didn't like it. They were the nerds. But when the teachers of religious law, who were Pharisees, nerds, saw him eating with tax collectors and other sinners, they asked his disciples, why does he eat with such scum? People are ridiculous. Seriously, these are the guys, right? These are the guys who got together, formed a conspiracy of lies to have an innocent man murdered. They had Jesus murdered. And they were asking how he ate with such scum. Religion is very dangerous, and we'll talk about that later. So let's keep going. I love Jesus' response. Here's what Jesus said. When Jesus heard this, he told them, healthy people don't need a doctor. Sick people do. I have come to call not those who think they are right. He doesn't say that are righteous. He says that think they are. I mean, you guys think you've got it all figured out, so you're good. I am interested in the people who know they don't. I'm interested in the people who are lost and have no idea what to do. That's who I am called to reach. And what he would say to you today is that who is who you are called to reach. That is who you are called to bring holiness to. Because here's the deal. The people in your life that don't know Jesus don't know that they need Jesus. They don't know. And he's put you in their life to make sure, unless you're a teenager, break up with them. You can invite them to church on Facebook, but not in person. I'm not kidding. Because see, what he's saying is, look, you don't have to abandon the relationship. You do have to change your approach to the relationship. You do have to seek out ways to bring holiness to them. You have to become a leader in that group. Another way to put it, when you're thinking about these people in your life, think of it like this. We must become the right they in their lives. All the stuff we've been talking about for the last few weeks, where I've been saying, hey, make sure these people in your life, I just flipped it. You have to become that to those people, even if they don't do it in return. Again, because that's what Jesus did for you. So between some of you are going to have to, in your relationships with your best friend, you're going to have to begin to lovingly ignore their advice. You just have to ignore it. You're going to have to temper the amount of times you say, I told you so, because no one likes that. And because Jesus doesn't say, I told you so. But you're going to have to change your approach to that relationship. It's very important to point out, Levi did not abandon his friends, but he quit his job. He did not remain a tax collector. He severed that tie. He changed his approach to that relationship. So for some of you, there are things you need to get out of. You need to abandon the relationship for a time before you can then try to approach them in a better way. Teenagers, break up with that person. Some of you need to think long and hard about the jobs you have, about the people you're partnered with, and pray to ask God to show you another way. As I said, some of you, your best friends, people you have been close with forever, you are going to have to change your entire approach to that relationship. I'm not saying you abandon them, but you change your approach to the relationship, one where you become more of a leader and less of a partner. Because, as we've said the entire series, they influence the direction and quality of our lives, which means even in these relationships where we are trying to be Jesus to them, we can either bring them to Jesus or they can bring us away. That's kind of the principle I want you to take away from this as you're wrestling with this, because this is something you're going to wrestle with for the rest of your life. If you were hoping at the end of 3 weeks I was going to give you a nice little bow and just have all the answers and you were going to know what to do, that's not the way it works. This is something you're going to have to pray about, you're going to have to struggle with every day of your life, which is a good thing, because your relationship with Jesus should happen daily, right? If you talk to Jesus once a week when you come here, he misses you 6 days a week. And there's a lot he wants to say 6 days a week. And he wants to speak to you daily on how to balance this, how to balance these people who are in your life, who God's positioned in your life so that you can lead to Jesus, but how to make sure they're not leading you away. Because here's the principle I want you to see. In every relationship, in our relationships with non-Christians, you're either leading or leaving. You're either leading them to Jesus or you're leaving Jesus. And how do you know the difference? You look at the path you're leaving behind. It's very simple. It's been our foundation for the last 2 weeks. You look at the path you're leaving behind. You say, is this the way I want my life going? If your path is moving towards Jesus and you're bringing them with you, keep it up. If your path is moving away from Jesus, it might be time to sever some ties for a while. Because hear me, Jesus loves them more than you do, but he does not want you to reach them at the expense of your life. He's bigger than you. He's stronger than you. He's got plans you don't know about. So don't use that as a crutch. But he does want to use you. But more importantly, he wants to keep you on the path God has for your life. What's that path look like? Very simple. Psalms explains it. Psalm 119 says, your word is a lamp to guide my feet and a light for my path. the Bible, his written word, is full of principles and foundations that we can build our life on. His living word, Jesus Christ, is a perfect example. So our path should be moving closer to Jesus. We should be becoming more like Jesus. We should learn to trust God more and be more obedient and be more kind and be more gentle and be more loving and be more forgiving. And hear me, you are never more like Jesus than when you are leading other people to Jesus. So you've got to figure out how to manage this tension of having people in your life who need Jesus, loving them and bringing holiness to them without them causing you to leave the path Jesus has for you. And the best way I can describe it is to give you the picture of a boat. We've all seen boats. You all know about boats. Boats are great. Boats are a great place to relax, a great place to have fun. A boat belongs in the water. It's where it's created to be, in the water. And when that boat is in the water, it is perfectly accomplishing its purpose. The boat can be used for fun and enjoyment. It can even be used to rescue people that are drowning in the water. When the boat is in the water, then you are perfectly safe because the boat was created to be in the water. Now, the second water gets in the boat, everything changes. Boat in the water, fantastic. Water in the boat, you better stop and get that water out as quickly as possible. Because as water gets in the boat begins to sink. And you can go under. Jesus is calling you to be a boat in the lives of your friends and family, your neighbors and coworkers. To be a boat that's bringing Jesus, that's bringing holiness to them. But you can't allow water to get in your boat. You can't allow them to influence you, which is why you don't abandon them. You simply change your approach. So my prayer, my challenge for you as we end this series and as you leave today, as you try to wrestle through this and figure out what exactly it is God wants you to do, is that you will begin to rely on God more than you did when you got here. That your relationship with him will grow, that you'll talk to him more, that you'll ask him these questions. In fact, we're going to close with a song today so that you can sing and that God can remind you that he is who he says he is and you can trust him. Because some of you are so scared right now, you don't know what to do. Because you don't want to change this relationship. You don't want to break up with him. You don't want to have to change careers. You don't know how to do it. And Jesus wants to calm you today and say, hey, I'm here. I knew about this before you did. I've got you. You got to trust me. You got to believe that I want the best for your life. And in fact, I want to use you to change them. I want to use you to change the world. But you have to be careful. You have to keep talking to me. And we have to keep examining your path. We have to keep looking at the path you're leaving behind. And if you're continuing to move towards me, fantastic, keep it up. If you're not, come to me. Surround yourself with the right they. As I said last week, best place to meet right they, right here. Right here. Surround yourself with people that do have the same foundation as you, that can help you learn how to bring holiness to those people that need it. And in all things, surrender it to God and say, God, you're in charge. I'm not. I know you want the best for me. You're smarter than me. You know more. You love me completely. Guide my life. Show me the right relationships to be in. Show me how I need to change my approach to the people in my life that need you. Show me how to be a boat in their life without letting the water in, without letting them influence me. And most importantly, Father, show me your plan for my life. That's what he wants for you. That's what he designed you to have. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it as you walk through it with the people in this room, as you walk through it with this church, as we partner together to see the people in your life have their lives changed. Here's a challenge. Next Sunday, we're starting a brand new series. I want you to invite with the same passion you did for grand opening. Bring those people to Jesus. Even if they fight, even if they argue, bring them. Just tell them to come and see. Because you never know. Just like Nathaniel, you never know what Jesus might do when they discover the chair with their name on it. It's waiting. And if you're willing, God can use you to change the world. Let's pray. Father, we love you so much. God, we just thank you for who you are. We thank you for your son. And God, as we prepare to sing this last song, I just pray that you just move in our hearts, Father, and just calm them. As we're nervous about what's coming next, give us wisdom, give us clarity. Give us a passionate conviction that you're right. Father, just show us the proper steps to take so that we can cling to the right thing in our lives and that we can bring holiness to everyone else, that we can bring you to them so that they might be saved because of us. We love you. As we sing these words, comfort our hearts and give us courage for the days ahead. It's in your son's amazing name we pray.
Thanks for joining us this week for the Wellspring Church podcast. For more information, sermon downloads, and more, visit us at wellspringchurch.tv.